Hi, this is Christopher O'Reilly, host of From the Top. Thank you for tuning into this week's podcast. While this podcast is free for all of you, it actually costs our little nonprofit some significant resources to purchase rights for all this fabulous music. Please consider making a small gift to From the Top and keep us broadcasting loud and clear. Go to fromthetop.org and click on Support.
What were you doing at 15? Well, today you'll meet a young pianist who's already performed in Baghdad with the Iraqi National Symphony and at the White House for the president and his family. He'll perform the music of Samuel Barber and share some of his stories of travel. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. We're home in Boston at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall, where we'll also meet a 17-year-old soprano with classic rock-loving parents and hear a teenage cello quartet perform music that evokes the spirit of an old-fashioned barn-raising. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for joining us. Welcome. Autumn in New England with its warm days, beautiful angular light, fiery colors, justifiably suicidal Red Sox fans. It's pretty gorgeous, and I'm happy to say we're back home in Beantown to enjoy it. And we've got a pretty colorful show for you today, matching the season. Joanne mentioned that young soprano, who has a colorful sense of humor, she's a self-described princess of sorts who's grown up with rock and roll parents. And we've got two single instrument quartets today, a cello quartet and a flute quartet. It's a little unusual, so in addition to making some great music, both foursomes are going to engage in a little cello versus flute game we've cooked up. And then there's the amazing young gentleman joining us now, a wonderful pianist whose young performance career and personal philosophy would have to be described as global. Please welcome, from New York City, 15-year-old Llewellyn Sanchez-Werner. Llewellyn, we've had a lot of musicians on this show who attend Juilliard's pre-college division, but you, at your young age, have already been accepted into Juilliard's conservatory and college level. Are the big kids treating you okay?
I feel completely at home. What a bunch of creative and innovative people. We've already shared experiences in the practice rooms, having political debates, intense political debates in Central Park. And we went to a Yankees game, but I shouldn't say that here.
No, don't say that here. No. That's all right. Well, your colleagues, I'm sure, are duly impressed. We all are with you. Tell everyone what you've brought to open the show.
Sure. I'll be performing the fourth movement of Samuel Barber's Piano Sonata, which was premiered in 1950 by Vladimir Horowitz.
All right, the fugue from the Barber Sonata. When you're ready, take it from the top.
Thank you.
Llewellyn Sanchez Werner, 15 years old, from New York City, playing the fugue from the Barber Sonata. Well, Llewellyn, thank you for providing us with the new gold standard in Barber Fugues. Absolutely. That was
coming from you, that means a lot.
Well, astonishing, astonishing, truly astonishing. I mentioned your early admission to the Juilliard School, but you've been performing in some pretty amazing locations as well. Let's start at home in the States. Name any old concert you've given, let's say, in Washington, D.C.
Well, I had the honor of performing for President Obama and the First Lady, Michelle Obama, at the White House.
Wow. So what was that like?
The experience was truly sublime. I walk into a building with so much history. To my left is the portrait of George Washington that I saw in my textbooks when I was 3. And I got to play on a piano co-designed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Steinway. Yep. Yep. And well, even though the president was commanding and presidential, of course, I was surprised by the genuine warmth that came across. It's something that I'll remember for a long time.
I'm so jealous that you got to.
You've done amazing things yourself. Don't be jealous.
Hey, how about did you get to meet Bo, their dog?
I did not. He must have been on the lawn somewhere.
You know,
but that's unfortunate.
No appreciation of music, Bo, I guess. That's truly impressive. But I actually think you can top that with a performance location you played in that isn't white, it's actually green.
You must be referring to the Green Zone in Baghdad. Yes.
That's right.
Well, I was able to perform with a remarkable group of individuals in the Iraqi National Symphony Orchestra in the Al Rashid Hotel, which is half in the red zone, half in the green zone. These are musicians who risk their lives to bring music, to bring the arts to their country and to their home. And working with them was absolutely a tremendous experience. I got there with helmet, flak jacket, drove through some dangerous roads, but always really excited and feeling the anticipation of working with these people. I think that doing these collaborative projects really is what the arts are all about, working with them on a project, working on building music.
You love to be informed about what's going on in the world.
Yes.
You keep up with, you read the newspapers and
CNN, New York Times, to be a part of the world that we live in, talking to people.
So you hope to combine your love of performance with doing good things in the world.
Definitely. As artists, we have an opportunity to connect a vast and diverse audience. So if we could use the art to transcend the cultural and political barriers that exist in our world and really make an impact on a global scale, that's what my dream is. That's what I hope to do.
Well, you're doing it already in great, great form. And this barber was, as I say, magnificent. It was really great having you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Llewellyn Sanchez Werner, 15 years old, from New York City.
We've got video footage of Llewellyn playing in Baghdad. Check it out at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Today we want to do a shout-out to an organization that's right here in our hometown, Boston. It's a public elementary school and one of the few in the country where music is central to the daily curriculum. Every kid gets an instrument and 3 hours of musical instruction a day. The philosophy is that the pursuit of musical excellence has kids striving for quality in all areas of their lives. I'm talking about the Conservatory Lab Charter School, and Diana Lam, the head of the school, is here in our audience. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you.
Diana, I know we've sent some of our From the Top kids your way to help with the teaching. How are they doing?
I'm happy to report they're doing just great.
Great. Diana, your career is amazing. You've been superintendent of the San Antonio school system, of Providence, Rhode Island, of Dubuque, Iowa, of Chelsea, Massachusetts. How long have you been at this education thing?
Well, almost 40 years.
Wow, that's fantastic. And so now you're at this great musical elementary school. What is it about the atmosphere there that really makes you want to come to work every day?
Well, after 40 years in education, I did learn a couple lessons. The first one was, it happens at the school. And so I wanted to go back to a school. And the second lesson is that for education to stay current, you have to be predisposed to innovation. And so Conservatory Lab was definitely such a school. But most importantly, I would say that the school takes children and youth seriously, not unlike From the Top. And that's what makes it so unique. And then, of course, there are the small moments, significant, like watching a brother teach his younger sister one-on-one at the school. Or the nervous parent that said, "Miss Lam, is my child going to learn to read and write also?" And I, you know, of course, even we'll do better. And our latest test results actually show that.
If you all want to find out more about the Conservatory Lab Charter School, go to fromthetop.org, where you'll find the school featured on our map of America. Deanna, before you sit down, would you do the honor of introducing our next young performers?
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the teenage members of the Boston Flute Academy Young Artists Quartet.
Welcome to our flutists, who are Emma Holzkamp, Jinji Zhang, and Brendan Dooley, all 17 years old, and Elizabeth Sperry, who's 15. Jinji, Brendan, and Elizabeth are from the Boston area. Emma is from Greenwood, Indiana, but she's studying at the Walnut Hill School in Natick, Massachusetts. She also joins us at the microphone. Emma, would you introduce the piece you guys are going to play?
We'll be performing Lyric Poem by George MacKay.
Thank you.
the Boston Fleet Academy Young Artist Quartet, Emma Holzkamp, Jinji Zhang, Brendan Dooley, and Elizabeth Sparrow. What a great performance and wonderful piece. What is the biggest challenge musically for a flute ensemble? Brendan, what would you say?
I think there are a whole host of really unique challenges for this piece in particular. It's just such a sensitive, delicate piece, and there's some really, really piano moments that are quite beautiful if you bring them out properly. And I think that I've always thought that a flute quartet or a flute choir is particularly suited to this kind of sound.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I would say that it's difficult to master the art of losing some of your soloistic tendencies in your playing to really meld into creating one sound with four separate instruments.
That really comes across, I must say. Jinji, you were saying that even though people think the fast and high notes are difficult, it's really the low notes that can really scare a flutist?
Yeah, most instruments get wider at the bottom as they progress, but the flute stays basically the same in bore, so it makes low notes more difficult and less powerful.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, what is it? I mean, is it all in the keys as far as finding these notes, or do you have to do things along the way with your lip?
Well, you have to adjust your embouchure for every single note on the flute, and for the lower notes especially, you have to make sure that you're really, really relaxed. And I think that's what makes those low notes hard, because you get really, really scared when you see them. So your immediate reaction is to really tense up, and that's what really makes them hard.
Wow. I know some flutists who actually do a note of the day in their practice, because it takes just such tremendous rehearsal of each separate note to get the feel for that. And so they might choose one specific note and spend 15 minutes on it a day. Gosh. And just to get that muscle memory.
I wasn't aware of that. I always thought, horn players, I understand, they've only got three, keys to play with, and so a lot of it has to. That's amazing. Now, Brendan and Emma, I don't know if this is as hard as those low notes, but you two have been experimenting with something really fun on the flute.
Yeah, this summer, both of us were finalists in a competition with the National Flute Association. And as part of the competition, the finalists have to learn a commissioned piece that's commissioned specifically for this event in a matter of months. And
this year, it's usually some contemporary extended techniques piece. Mm-hmm. It's usually a little out there. But this year, it happened to be a piece written by YouTube sensation Greg Patillo, and it ended up being a beatbox piece.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Well, I know, I've heard the old jazz technique of humming while you play. We heard, the guy from Jethro Tull used to do that, and Herbie Mann and folks like that. But beatboxing on the flute, you guys care to give us a little demonstration?
I would love to.
Great. Thanks, Emma and Brendan, for that extended technique. As you guys know, we have another single instrument quartet on today's show, a cello quartet, and we want to invite you all to come back at the end of the show for a grudge match.
Oh, goodness.
Flutists against cellists. What we're going to do is we're going to see how much you know about each other's instruments.
Okay.
So that sounds
okay.
Your game for that?
Awesome. No, it's on.
All right. And again, thanks for a great performance.
Thank you.
We'll see you later. The Boston Flute Academy Young Artist Quartet. Emma Holzkamp, Jinji Zhang, Brendan Dooley, and Elizabeth Sparrow. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please offer a royal welcome to our next guest, Princess Ashley of Norton. Welcome, Hiya. Your Highness. Your Highness, we should explain, actually, Ashley Robillard is the name of our princess, that Norton is Norton, Massachusetts, so I should have said Naughton, you know. But and also tell everyone that you're a 17-year-old soprano, but why a princess?
Well, when I was younger, I was particularly enamored with Disney movies, all the princesses. I think Belle was my favorite. And I insisted wherever I went, the grocery store, the library, the mall, no matter where I was going, I would wear this lovely faux leopard coat and plastic princess shoes and a glittering tiara. And I would always introduce myself saying, "Hello, my name's Princess Ashley of Norton. I'm ever so pleased to meet you." So...
I can't believe you stole my whole routine.
Sorry.
Well, the pieces you're singing for us today don't offer you the opportunity of playing a princess, but they are beautiful, and one of them has lyrics by William Shakespeare, and he wrote about princesses a good deal. That's close enough.
It's good enough for me.
All right. Well, by your leave, Princess Ashley, I'll go back to the piano while you tell everyone about the two songs you're going to sing for us.
All right. The first piece I'll be singing is The Tulip Tree by Ned Roram, poem by Paul Goodman. And in this story, I am a woman singing to a little boy in a tulip tree in the midst of a horrible storm. Then I will sing Dominic Argento's Winter, the poem taken from William Shakespeare's Love's Labour's Lost. And in that poem is detailing the harsh Northern European winter while a cheery but ominous owl overlooks it all. When icicles hang by the wall, and Dick the shepherd blows his nail, and Tom bears logs into the hall, and milk comes frozen home in pail. When blood is nipped, and whiz may fall, then nightly sings the staring owl. Oh,
Ashley Robillard, 17 years old, our soprano from Norton, Massachusetts. Ashley studies at the Walnut Hills School for the Arts. Such a wonderful voice and such a great storyteller in that whole thing. So evocative.
Thank you very much.
So great doing those with you. Ashley, you sing so wonderfully. You must have been exposed to classical singing and opera at a very early age.
Not at all, actually. I was raised on a fairly healthy diet of Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, The Beatles, Aerosmith, The Who, Rolling Stones, all that jazz.
Wow. I understand your mom might have actually been at a Pink Floyd concert.
Yeah, well, while she was pregnant with me, she went to a Pink Floyd concert, so I was exposed to that music at a very early age.
That's right. That's why she still refers to that album as Dark Side of the Womb. So your parents aren't classical music people, but they are highly creative in a way that I know you find a little entertaining.
Yes, though my parents both have fairly nice executive jobs. They also, along with my aunt and uncle, have created a maple-flavored whiskey called Cabin Fever, 80 proof, and is the actual spirit of New England.
I should say, what a great idea. What a great concept. So, Ashley, how did you get hooked on classical singing?
I was actually 4 when I started musical theater because I was a rambunctious ball of energy and my parents had to have me doing something. And when I was around 10, my teacher started getting me into opera, just looking at some art songs, very age-appropriate stuff. And then my dad's bosses found out that I was interested in opera, and they say, well, let's take her to her first opera. And my first opera ended up being Carmen at the Metropolitan Opera House.
Wow.
And after that, I was just like, forget musical theater, this is where it's at.
Right, that is. And I know the magic flute's been a very important piece for you, too.
Yeah, I spent 6 weeks in Italy as the first spirit in the magic flute, and we toured all around, and I have never been in a more amazing place filled with such dedicated, talented people in probably the most beautiful location I've ever been.
Gosh. Do you feel like maybe, you know, going to live there or something? Or
it is on my to-do list.
Yeah.
For sure.
The Italians have a different sort of appreciation for opera and classical music in general than we do, don't they?
Yeah, it's definitely more ingrained in their culture. I remember when I was in Italy, you'd rehearse from 7 in the morning, go see an opera that starts at 9, doesn't get out till 12, you go eat at 1. Yeah. It was really hectic. So one night, we're walking back at around 2 in the morning. There's not a car in the road. There's no one out. And then one car drives by. It's blaring music, but it's not pop music or anything that most people listen to in popular culture. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's opera blaring from the music, from
wow.
the stereo.
That's cool. Now, keeping with our royalty theme, Ashley Robillard is, you're a cousin of Duke Robillard from Room Full of Blues.
I am indeed, yeah.
My gosh, great guitarist and vocalist.
He's quite the talented human
being. Your Highness, very good to be with you and to play with you, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. It was
Thanks.
An honor.
Thanks. Ashley Robillard, 17 years old, from Norton, Massachusetts.
As we say at the top of every episode, From the Top celebrates the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. But did you know that our radio show is just one of the many ways From the Top does that? Learn about our outreach efforts at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, we're coming to you from New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. New England Conservatory, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Coming up, a cello quartet plays a piece that'll have you wanting to go out and build something. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Standing next to me is our next young performer, 17-year-old Jisoo Kim. Jisoo is from Palisades Park, New Jersey, and we have to be especially nice to her because while she's performed her piece publicly many times, it's always been with somebody very special to her at the piano. Who is that, Jisoo?
My brother, Hyung-do.
And we know what an outstanding pianist Hyung-do is. He's actually been on the show before playing some great Liszt. So is it okay to play with me at the piano?
Yeah, I think so.
Just this once?
It'll be okay.
Tell everyone what we're going to play together.
We're going to be playing the fourth movement of Franck Violin Sonata.
Thank you. Jisoo Kim, 17 years old from Palisades Park, New Jersey. Jisoo is one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Jisoo, thank you for the pleasure of being your brother for 5 minutes. I really enjoyed your performance of the Frank
Sonata. Thank you.
Very nice. We mentioned that you're usually accompanied by your brother, Hyung Do, and that he was on our show, but we haven't talked about the fact that it's not always been uneventful collaboration between you two. It's sometimes more like fierce competition. Here's what Hyung Do said about your relationship on our program when he was here a year ago.
Yeah, so when she was younger, she started playing the piano, and I would just watch her play, and eventually I wanted to start playing the piano, so at age 4, I started lessons, and that's when I eventually progressed much faster than her, and she decided that piano wasn't really right for her, so so she moved to the violin, and it was better that way.
So is that true, or was that your brother just being boastful?
No, it's very true. I started the piano when I was 4. And then my brother gained some interest in the piano, so he would always sit next to me playing the piano while I was playing. And then he eventually started on piano lessons, and then he got much better than me very fast. So I stopped playing the piano because it wasn't any fun anymore. So I moved to the violin, yeah.
And now even as advanced as you've become on the violin, your brother was still stealing your thunder when he was accompanying you.
Yes. Yeah? A lot of times he was stealing my thunder. When I auditioned for any kind of a competition or even I auditioned for Juilliard, when I auditioned for Juilliard, I was 11 and my brother was 9 years old. So he was very short and cute, even to the judges. So then when we walked into the room, the first thing they said was, "Oh, is that your brother? He's so cute."
Tell us all about him.
So it was all about him, and the spotlight was all on him. But then thankfully I got in. I got into Juilliard, and then my brother also followed in my footsteps, and he also went to Juilliard.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that sounds like big sister hell to me, but did it really bug you at the time?
It bugged me a lot.
Yeah. Was he with you on your famous, or more, we should say, infamous karaoke night?
No, he was not with me at karaoke night, but it was a funny incident because at the end of the summer, my friends and I decided to go My friends and I decided to go to a Korean restaurant, minus the karaoke part, and my parents told me not to go, but obviously I did go, and I had a lot of fun, and when I came back home, I completely lost my voice, and when I came back, my dad, he obviously knew, so he was like, "You went karaokeing, right?" And I had no voice, and my brother was right next to my dad. And I could have just easily lied and said no, but since my brother was there, and I can't lie in front of him, it's easier to lie to my parents, but not to him. He's kind of like my conscience a little bit.
Sure.
So then
yeah.
I said no in a very not in a really convincing way.
Especially with no voice. No!
Yeah. With no voice. Yeah, but he's my best friend, and we, because we play a lot of music together, we connect in a lot of different ways. So it's always fun.
It's a nice family.
Yes.
And obviously it comes across in the warmth of your playing. It was really great having you
Thank
on the program.
You.
Thank you. All the best to you. Jisoo Kim, 17 years old, our violinist from Palisades Park, New Jersey.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Next up, a phenomenal cello quartet. But before we hear them play, we've got this little intellectual matchup I mentioned earlier between this quartet and the flute quartet from the first half of our program. Let's meet the members of our cello quartet, put together by our friend Kate Cayenne at the Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra. They call themselves Shades of Red, and they are 16-year-olds Claire Raisin and Andrew Lavin, 13-year-old Leland Koh. Leland's been a soloist on this show before, and 12-year-old Zlatimir Fung. Welcome, you guys. You ready to challenge the flute quartet?
Yeah. Yes.
Bring it.
All right, bring it. All right, and let's welcome back our teenage flutists. Emma Holzkamp, Jinji Zhang, Brendan Dooley, and Elizabeth Sperry.
Hey.
Hi.
Very good. Okay, so here's the deal. To test your knowledge of the broader world of classical music, and not just your knowledge of your own instrument, I'm going to ask you cellists questions about the flute, and you flutists will have to answer questions about the cello in a cello-flute grudge match. Flutists, since you've already played, you're more relaxed, so we're going to let you go first, all right?
Okay.
Joanne?
Okay, this is a simple clef question, but a bass clef question, which is the clef cellists read, not usually your home turf. In the bass clef, what note is one ledger line below the staff?
I think it's an E.
It's an E. That's our final answer.
That's absolutely correct, Emma. E for Emma. Very good. Score one for the flutist.
Okay. Now one for you cellists. What clef do you use when you write for the piccolo?
Treble.
That's a fine.
Yeah, it's
that's
double.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's simply the treble clef, but you note that everything is played one full octave higher.
Everything sounds an octave higher.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk equipment. Now, this one's multiple choice. Flutists, what's a rock stop? Is it A, a rather expensive but very light portable cello chair that won't rock even on uneven surfaces? B, a device made of a metal cup surrounded by a disc of rubber that holds the end pin and keeps it from slipping? Or C, a little motion detector that beeps when a cellist begins to rock with more gusto than Yo-Yo Ma.
I'm pretty sure it's B.
I think you're quite right.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, B.
Yes,
B. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, cellists. Yeah. Which of the following is not part of the flute? A, the head joint. B, the body joint. C, the ball joint. Or D, the foot joint.
I have no idea.
I like C.
The ball joint. Exactly. A ball joint is actually what connects your control arm to your steering knuckle in your Chevy. Okay. Thank you, Ka Talk. I think Joanne.
They got them all.
Everybody got all their answers right.
They tied.
You guys are awesome. Congratulations. And thanks for playing our cello and flute grudge match. Special thanks, and we'll say goodbye now to our flute quartet, Emma Holzkamp, Elizabeth Sperry, Brendan Dooley, and Jinji Zhang. Thanks very much.
Bye.
And now we'll hear our cello quartet, Shades of Red. And they're going to be playing, Andrew, this is a piece written by your father. What's it called?
Yes, it's called A Barn Raising.
And was it originally written for a cello quartet? Or
no, it was actually originally written for a string quartet. He has a group out in the Tetons in Wyoming that he plays with every summer. It was written for them, and then he arranged it for us last year.
And he actually, I guess, saw a barn raising out in the Tetons?
Yeah, he witnessed a big construction project going on out there and decided to write a piece about it.
Quite inspired. Claire, what would you say are the challenges when four cellos play together?
I think it's really difficult because all our instruments sound exactly the same, so it's definitely a challenge to bring out the different colors and the mood changes that happen throughout the piece.
Andrew, what would you say? I mean, you know,
it is hard because they're all the same range, but I mean, it's the good way to make it not hard is listen to the melody. Whoever has the melody, that's what I do. Listen to the melody, and I guess it might be a little easier for me because I play the instrument. But that's what makes it easier: is you listen to the melody and you know what to do.
I know Andrew's dad is a cellist, and so that the problem of leading and following, and you guys have really made a beautiful performance out of this piece, not just from blending together, but also knowing who's got the main voice and being supportive. Leland and Zlati, the amazing things about this piece, I know you both admire it. What do you enjoy about it?
Well, it seems that a lot of the parts of the piece correspond to what was actually happening in the construction site. Like, it starts out as various animals are scattering, I guess, and other parts are like birds and eagles soaring above.
It's got a jazz sort of feel to it too. Where does that come from?
Yeah, well, after kind of the construction's all over, it goes into this groovy hoedown.
with a theme and then variations on that theme.
Nice. It is a great piece. So we're going to hear you raise this barn. But before we do, I want to thank all of our great young performers today and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, again, we're going to hear Barn Raising by Stephen Lavin. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vigneri. The tour producer is David Balsam, the assistant music producer is Caroline Cardios-Menos, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes, Doyen Chung, Claus Nystrom, and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for 40 years working to improve health and health care, on the web at rwjf.org. From the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. This is NPR.
Thanks for downloading this week's From the Top podcast. If you liked what you heard, head over to our website, fromthetop.org, where you can listen to every show in its entirety. I'm Christopher O'Reilly. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you again next week.